16. An hour or so later, we passed the Glen Armand pub, turned left off the tarmac, bumped along a dirt road, and stopped by a disused stockyard. Nearby, behind a screen of tamarisks, there was an old unpainted tin bungalow, grey, going over into rust, with a brick chimney standing up the middle. This was Hanlon's house. In the yard out front, there were a stack of empty oil drums and another stack of ex-army surplus. At the back, under a squeaky wind pump, there was a dead Chevrolet, with silver grass growing up through it. A faded poster pasted to the front door read, "Workers of the World Unite." The door scraped open 6 inches. Hanlon was standing behind it.
"What's the matter with ya?"
he crackled.
"Never seen a man naked before? Come on in, boys."
For a man in his 70s, Hanlon looked in good shape. He was skinny and taut-muscled, with a short Fiat head and a craning neck. His hair was crew-cropped and white, and he would pat down the bristles with his hand. He had a broken nose, wore steel-framed spectacles, and spoke in a loud nasal voice. We sat and he stood. He stared earnestly at his privates, scratched his crotch, and bragged about a lady pharmacist he'd tupped in Tennant Creek.
"Not bad for 73.
He looked down at himself.
"Serviceable knackers, reasonable set of teeth. What more would an old man need?"
"Nothing," said Arcady.
"You're right,"
Hanlon smirked. He tied a towel round his tummy and got out 3 bottles of beer. I noticed that his right hand was withered. It was baking hot inside the house. The heat pressed down from the roof and our shirts were soaked with sweat. The outer room was an L-shaped corridor with an old enamel bath up one end. Then there was a kitchen, then a group of table and chairs. He showed us the clippings on the walls, a strike in Kalgoorlie, Lenin's skull, Uncle Joe's moustache, and pin-ups from Playboy. He had settled here 30 years back with a woman who had left him. He had sold off the land and now lived on welfare. On the table there was a scarlet oil cloth and a tabby cat licking off a plate.
"Git, ya bastard!"
He raised his fist and the cat flew off.
"So what are you boys up to?"
"Going up to Cadich country," Arcady answered, "with Alan Nakamura's mob."
"Survey, eh?"
"Yes."
"Sacred sites, eh?"
"Yes."
"Sacred bloody baloney. What those boys need is organisation."
He flipped off the beer caps, then blew his nose into his hand and smeared the snot carefully on the underside of his chair. He caught me looking at him. He looked at me. He reminisced about his days at Kalgoorlie as a paid-up party member before the Second World War.
"Ask him,"
he pointed at Arcady.
"Ask the boy for my curriculum vitae."
He pottered off into the inside room, where his bed was, and after rummaging about among old newspapers, found a book with a dull red buckram binding. He sat down again, adjusted his spectacles, and flattened his spine against the chair back.
"And now,"
he announced, pretending to open the book at random,
"now we will read the gospel according to our Father Marx. Forgive an old man's blasphemies. For today, what the fuck is today? Thursday, thought so. The date is immaterial. Page 256. And what do we have? What then constitutes the alienation of labour? First, the fact that labour is external to the worker, i.e., it does not belong to his essential being. That in his work he does not affirm himself, but denies himself, does not feel content, but unhappy, does not develop his physical and mental energy, but mortifies his body and ruins his mind. Nothing like a few lines of Marx before food," he beamed. "For bracing the intellect and strengthening the digestion, have you boys eaten?"
"We have," said Arcady.
"Well, you're eating here with me."
"No, honestly, Jim, we can't."
"You bloody can.
Or we'd be late."
"Late? What's late and what's early? An important philosophical question."
We'd be late for a lady called Marion."
"Not a philosophical question," he said. "Who the hell's Marion?"
"Old friend of mine," Arcady said. "She's gone to fetch the Cadich women. We're meeting her at Middlebore."
"Marion? Maid Marion?"
Hanlon smacked his lips.
"Descending to Middlebore with her train of fair damsels? I tell you, they can wait. Can't get the stakes, boy."
"Only if it's quick, Jim,"
Arcady relented.
We've got an hour and that's it.
Give me 1 hour, 1 hour with you.
Hanlon still possessed the relics of a passable baritone. He looked at me.
Don't you look at me like that, he snapped. I've sung in choirs.
Arcady went out to fetch the steaks from the car.
So you're a writer, eh?
Hanlon said to me. Of sorts.
Ever do an honest day's work in your life?
His blue eyes were watering. His eyeballs were suspended in nets of red wires. Try to, I said. The withered hand shot forward. It was purplish and waxy. The little finger was off. He held the hand to my face like a claw.
Now what this is?
He taunted. A hand.
A working man's hand.
I've done farm work, I said, and timber work.
Timber? Where?
Scotland.
What kind of timber?
Spruce, larch.
Very convincing. What kind of saw?
Power saw.
What make, you fool?
Can't remember.
Very unconvincing, he said. Doesn't sound right to me.
Arcady pushed through the door with the stakes. There were drops of blood on the white plastic bag. Hanlon took the bag, opened it, and inhaled.
Aha! That's better, he grinned. Nice red meat for a change.
He got up, lit the gas ring, poured fat from an old paint can, and laid out three steaks in the skillet.
Here, you,
he called to me.
You come and talk to the cook.
The fat began to splutter, and he took a spatula to stop the meat from sticking.
So you're writing a book?
Trying to, I said.
Why don't you write your book right here? You and me could have uplifting conversations.
We could, I said, hesitantly.
Ark,
Hanlon called.
Watch these steaks a minute, will you, boy? I'm going to show the bookie his billet. Here, you come with me.
He dropped the towel to the floor, pulled on a pair of shorts, and slipped his feet into thongs. I followed him into the sunlight. The wind had freshened and was kicking up clouds of red dust along the track. We went through the tamarisks to a creaking gum tree with a caravan underneath it. He opened the door. There was the smell of something dead. The windows were wrapped in spiders' webs. The bedding was stained and torn. Someone had spilled tomato sauce over the tabletop, and the ants were swarming over it.
Nice little hidey hole, Hanlon said chirpily. Reasonable rent, and you could oil the tree if the creaking gets you down.
Very nice, I said.
But not quite nice enough, eh?
I didn't say that.
But meant it,
he hissed.
Ah, of course, we could fumigate the place. Might fumigate you in the process.
He banged the door to and stalked off back to the house. I hung about the yard for a while, and when I went in, the steaks were done. Hanlon had fried six eggs and was ready to carve.
Serve his lordship first,
he said to Arcady. He cut three hunks of bread and set a sauce bottle on the table. I waited for him to sit down. It was unbearably hot. I looked at the steak and the egg yolks. Hanlon looked at me for what seemed a full minute and said,
Get your fucking fangs into that steak.
We ate without speaking. Hanlon steadied his steak with his withered hand and cut it into cubes with the good one. His knife had a serrated blade and a pair of curled-up prongs on the end of it.
Who the hell does he think he is?
He turned to Arcady.
Who asked him to poke his upper snotty class nose in here?
You did, said Arcady.
Did I? Well, I made a mistake.
I'm not upper class, I said.
But a touch too classy for my little luncheon party. Luncheon. That's what they call it in Pongleterre. Luncheon with the Queen, what?
Cut it out, Jim, Arcady said. He was very embarrassed.
None of it meant personally, said Hanlon.
That's something, I said.
It is,
he agreed.
Tell him about Maralinga, said Arcady, in an effort to turn the conversation. Tell him about the cloud.
Hanlon raised his good hand and clicked his fingers like castanets.
The cloud? Aye, aye, sir. The cloud. Her Majesty's cloud. Sir Anthony stuck up in Eden's cloud. Poor Sir Anthony. Wanted his cloud so badly. So he could say to the Rooksy in Geneva, Look, old boy, we also have the cloud. Forgetting, of course, that there are such things as variables in climate, even in Australia. Forgetting the wind might be blowing in the wrong direction. So he calls up Bob Menzies and says, Bob, I want my cloud now, today. But the wind, says Sir Bob, don't you give me wind, says Sir Anthony. I said now. So they let off the device. Oh, I love that word, device. And the cloud, instead of sailing out to sea to contaminate the fishes, sailed inland to contaminate us. Where they lost it, lost the bugger over Queensland. Also, Sir Anthony could have a nice cosy cloud talk with Comrade Nikita. Yes, comrade, it's true. We do, too, have the cloud. Now that my men over there didn't lose it for a while. Vaporised a few abos on the way. That's enough, said Arcady firmly.
Hanlon hung his head.
Ah, shit, he said,
and then prodded another steak cube and put it in his mouth. No one spoke until Hanlon burped and said,
Beg pardon?
He pushed his plate away.
Can't eat the bugger, he said.
His face had turned putty colour. His hand was shaky.
Anything the matter? Asked Arcady.
I got a crook gut, Arc.
You should go to a doctor.
I've been to the doctor. They want to cut me up, Arc.
I'm sorry, I said.
I won't let them cut me. That's right, isn't it?
No, said Arcady. Maybe you should go.
Well, maybe I will,
he sniffed miserably. At the end of another 5 minutes, Arcady got up and laid his arm protectively around the old man's shoulders.
Jim, he said in a soft voice, I'm sorry. I'm afraid we've got to go. Can we take you anywhere?
Nah, he said. I'll stay.
We made a move to go.
Stay a bit longer,
Hanlon said.
No, really we have to go.
I wish you boys would stay a bit longer. We could have a good time.
We'll come again, I said.
Will you?
Hanlon held his breath.
When?
Couple of days, said Arcady. We'll be done by then.
Then we're heading out to Cullen.
Sorry I flew at you,
he said to me. His lip was quivering.
Always fly at Poms.
No worries, I said. It was hotter than ever outside, and the wind was dying. In the front paddock, a wedge-tailed eagle was skimming down the line of the fence posts. It was a lovely, gleaming, bronze-feathered bird, and it sheered away when it saw us. I tried to shake Hanlon's hand. He was holding it over his abdomen. We got into the Land Cruiser.
You might have said thank you for the steaks,
he called out after us. He was trying to resume his abrasive manner, but he looked scared. His cheeks were wet with tears. He turned his back. He could not bear to watch us going.